This is the Goalkeeper Roundtable, hosted by Dr. Bill Steffen, with Jeff Shook, George Costellas, and Dave LaTourette. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Goalkeeper Roundtable. Today, we interview ourselves. Yep, it's just us, the guys sitting around the table talking about goalkeeping. Specifically, we talk about the back pass and playing out of the back and what it means to the goalkeeper physically, but also psychologically. We also talk about the importance of consistency, work ethic and setting standards, and how important it is for our goalkeepers to be competitive. Throughout the show, we talk about certain instances that we've seen in the Premier League and in the Bundesliga as well. In case you haven't seen those, we've linked some highlights in the show notes so you can make reference to them. So sit back, enjoy the discussion. We think it's a really good discussion with Dr. Bill, GK, Shooky, and Lotto.
All right. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. We're talking about goalkeeping, and we're specifically talking about playing out of the back, how playing out of the back has become de rigueur. It's become mandatory for a lot of programs. Now, we're talking both professional clubs, but we're also talking about the applications as they trickle down to youth goalkeepers. And specifically, just before I actually hit the record button, we were talking about the City United game with Zach Steffen in goal, who is not really a long lost nephew of me, of mine, but how previously he would not have been as comfortable playing the way that they did. And again, I would say beyond the individual, Zach, I just think teams now are playing so much more, maybe because the EPL is doing it, because it became continental and kind of drifted into the EPL. Previously, the EPL was probably not going to do that, but now they are doing that very much out of the back, and the requirements for a goalkeeper to play out of the back. And somebody, I don't know which one of you guys said it, but like five, it might've been George, 5v2s, man. I mean, goalkeepers need to play 5v2s so they know how to be deceptive with their touch. So it buys them a bit more time, because we're referring to one instance where Zach Steffen did that. He just leans one way, but touches it the other way, and he sends the City or the United player the wrong direction and buys himself a little bit more time and a little bit more distance to play into before he plays that next ball out. And so I think that, you know, for the youth goalkeeper coaches out there, you know, if the kids are playing 5v2 and your goalkeeper wants to get in on it, man, it's fun. I mean, I'll play 5v2. If we started playing 5v2 now, I don't know what time I'd want to stop. I mean, I will just play 5v2, you know, as long as I'm able to do it. It's fun. Anyway, I've been just rambling, man. But you guys, thoughts?
Billy, not a wish guy. Yeah, no, I wish I knew which guest we had. And I think we've talked about it. Again, we have so many conversations online and offline. They start to come together, and we don't know where one starts and one ends. But one of the, and it may have been a Jason Grubb conversation. And again, everyone's in a different environment in terms of how they deal with their goalkeepers. Like if you're a team coach and how you're dealing with your goalkeepers, but if you're a coach out there where maybe you're going to have your goalkeepers do some specific work, I think Jason talked about the idea when they come into training, or maybe it's David Winter, about their goalkeepers come in, and the first thing they do is they join the team and they play like a 5v2, a 4v2, or some sort of possession game. And then they go out to, you know, more specific goalkeeper training. So I really like that idea. So if you're in an environment and it's something that I would like to take forward, and I've done it when I've had to coach our boys, like I tend to take our spring season when we have a spring season, and the first half before we get into our non-competitive season with matches is I have the whole session, and I start and I put my goalkeepers, and it's always been by necessity because I don't have a goalkeeper coach or someone else with me, our other goalkeeper coach. So I integrate my goalkeepers, and we play a 4v2 with a 10x10 grid. And what I like to do is it's two 10 by 10 grids together. And the four have to put X amount of passes together. And then once they do, they can find a target player on the end of the next 10 by 10 grid. And I like to make my goalkeepers that target player. So not only are they having to move to receive and communicate, and now, but then all of a sudden they're put under instant pressure because there's two defenders already in that other 10 by 10 grid, or you can have defenders transfer. It doesn't matter. But as soon as that ball gets played, he has to play two touches. So there's a, you know, there's that side to it, and then making a decision side to it. And there's also, you know, there's transition from the wide players in the four. So anything that you can do to help your goalkeepers feel more comfortable under pressure, I think is important. And as we were chatting too, is one of those things that I did this with the coaching staff at Dartmouth, is we played 2v2 in a racquetball court. We would have lunch three days a week. Our lunch hour was 2v2 in the racquetball court. You know, myself, Steve Swanson, Shelley, Jamie Smith are both at the great players, but they're down at South Carolina now. Fran O'Leary. So there were five or six of us, and we would just play 2v2. And at first I was the weak link in the group per se. And then the more that I did, it got put under pressure in really tight spaces. I understood my limitations, which Zach Steffen, I think, has understood his limitations. And I just got better at playing quick, better first touch, better balls played. And I always tried to play. I always tried to play with a better player too. So I always tried to get on Steve Swanson's team.
Well, Lotto, I think that's a good point for the youth coaches out there, because you know what? If the goalkeeper says, "Well, if I play with the field players, I'm going to suck." Well, yeah, you are. Okay, you are. But you'll get better. And
deal with it.
Not playing, you're definitely not getting better. But okay, go ahead. Be the weak link for the first month. But you, as you pointed out, Lotto, correctly, that you'll get better. And then that will help you in the game, because now the confidence you develop in those 5v2s will transfer to when you receive a ball and you have to touch it away from pressure in an actual match. You'll be that much better at it. So I think that's right. That's the correct course of thinking with that. George, Jeff, what do you guys do in terms of working with your goalkeepers in terms of,
well, I'll just share
aligning them with field players, but you know, to develop that.
Well, I'll just share that. I mean, when I was with the Hartford Athletic, we initially started a lot of our training sessions with just 10 by 10 grids, or I think they were smaller actually. And the guys, as well as the goalkeepers, I encourage the goalkeepers get into those 5v2s. But also what I would organize within just the GK Union was just them having a bit of fun, just doing little, keeping the ball up in the air, you know, two touch or call the number, and they would work on their juggling, you know, but it's just developing comfortability on the ball. So within the team, they would start off with the 5v2s or whatever the numbers were. But when they came to the goalkeeper environment too, I always made sure that there was some form of, I'd say, foot skill activity to kind of get them going just for a bit of fun. But, Lotto, you mentioned, and Billy as well, you know, whether it's the youth environment or the college environment and putting your goalkeepers as targets. To me, I love that because it replicates kind of their position on the field. So they're going to be receiving a ball, and that then they're more than likely going to have to make a decision, one or two touch. So I would say that's a great starting point for goalkeepers. But obviously, if you want to get them, more effective with the ball, then, get them playing in small-sided games. And, you know, sometimes it means not being in goal, which to me, becoming a soccer player is going to make you a better goalkeeper.
We can also, too, put them in goal in that sort of position. It made me think of this, George, I play a game. It's a possession game, and whatever size you want to make it. And the goalkeeper works in a grid at the end of, there's a goalkeeper on either side of the grid, like an end zone, as I like to call it. And they can move anywhere, and they have, it teaches them to be active, to find right angles to receive and play out. And it's just a possession game to the point where they can even play, if they're comfortable enough, receive and play all the way across the grid to the other goalkeeper who's in their quote end zone as well. We play it for points. We play it for, again, you can play it any way you want it, any way you want to do it. But typically it's, you know, one team is playing into once if they play a ball into the goalkeeper and the goalkeeper plays it back out successfully into possession, that's a point. It's not a point for just finding the goalkeeper, because a lot anybody can do that. Find it into your goalkeeper and the goalkeeper has to play back out successfully for possession. Mm. And then it's a goal or a point, however you want to do it.
It's kind of like an offshoot of, I don't know, but you guys, I'm sure, are going to be familiar, the kind of cross the river connections where you have three channels.
Yes.
And it's like five and two in this, and the two extras are in the middle, and there's five in the other channel, and you got to hit four passes, 10 passes, whatever, and then play across that middle channel to the other side. And I think including a goalkeeper in that is great, because again, then they learn, okay, you know what? It is too tight. Can I find it across? And my goal is to find it across. And we've talked before about, you know, looking for the high player first. Once you achieve that number of passes, you're looking to play into that other grid. You don't get any more points for knocking around inside this grid. You score points by playing into the, you know, across the river into that other grid. And I think that helps a kid just learn, okay, yeah, we can keep it, but I'm looking to play there.
And if you're in Michigan, like Shooky, it's across the frozen river so you can bounce it.
Across the tundra.
Yeah. And typically with us, our practice is set up before we break off and do our functional groups. We do have some sort of rondo or an over the river game. And our goalkeepers take part in that as field players. So that's part of their warm up. That's part of their acclimation into the team and the team's acclimation to playing with them to figure out what is our goalkeeper comfortable with. Then we break back off and do our positional training and then bring them back in and put those pieces back together for big picture.
Good, cool.
I see. I just love that approach, because I think, you know, I mean, the game has evolved, the position has evolved, but also the team dynamics is involved. And, you know, back in the day, it's just like we were separated right away. You know, go off on your own with your goalkeeper coach, and then eventually you became integrated, rather than now it's just like, hey, go be a part of the team, go be a part of the group, you know, integrate right away. Now you break off and then you integrate again. And I just believe that's just going to bring more harmony, more chemistry. Obviously, the team dynamic between the players and the goalkeepers is, I would say, more cohesive.
A new definition of whole part, whole teaching methodology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really, I think one of the things with that I see when I would work with goalkeepers with this is that when they get the ball on their foot, then they look up and go like, okay, well, who should I be passing to? And that's when I would immediately jump in and announce, like, you should have answered that question before you got the ball. And, you know, you can just see it in young goalkeepers. They'll get the ball on foot and they're going like, okay, now what do I do? It's like, no, you need to do that. And that's a process that takes time. And that's a process where you are going to screw it up. You are going to be uncomfortable, but you will become comfortable by going through that. And I think putting the goalkeepers in those situations where, bang, there's the ball. Okay, get rid of it now. Where? They need to go through that thought process. And again, that's, you can see it in Zach Steffen, because when he gets the ball now from City, he knows, okay, I got these couple of options. And I'm going to play to this guy, even though he's defended, because he's going to draw people in and then he'll find the outside player. I can't go to that outside player right away, the wide player right away. So I'm going to knock it into him. He's tightly marked, but he's good enough. He's just going to knock it wide. He'll draw people in and then he'll knock it wide. And I think those are the things that they take time, but without the exposure and the education, they don't develop. Lotto, what you got?
As we saw with the West Brom game against Leeds, they're 5 minutes into the match, and I'm not sure, and I hate to speak without full knowledge and context of what a team's doing, but West Brom is playing out of the back, and their left back gets squeezed. Without taking a glance back, he plays the ball back to where he thought the goalkeeper was, and he played a 30-yard ball into a wide-open own goal. And the goalkeeper had a proper support line, didn't have a shot-stopping ball line, where you don't see those errors with Man City or Liverpool, teams who traditionally or have recently played out of the back as their team DNA. But now somebody else just now trying to get into vogue with it. And if you're not training it enough, you find yourself down 1-0 5 minutes in without even conceding a shot. So there are.
We used to always say that, and again, with training the kids, we'll be like, okay, I want the ball wide, but I'm not going wide until you play it, because I'm not going to abandon my goal. And so I know that I don't want the ball here. I want it over there. Play it over there. I'm waiting here. And when you play it there, I'll leave, but not until you've played it.
And in that situation too, that player, I want to say he was almost facing the corner, diagonally facing the corner flag or the touchline. Yep. So he couldn't see the goal. He couldn't see the goalkeeper. And you know, like Shuki alluded to, it was either a horribly misplayed ball or he had no idea. And there's a disconnect between where they know the goalkeeper should be and you know what they're trying to do as far as where they think the goalkeeper is, which the goalkeeper in that situation shouldn't be standing in the middle of the six box. They should be outside the post where the goalkeeper was.
Yeah, and it's tough on either one because we don't know. Maybe he did miss hit it and it was just a technical error, and hey, or it was just a total disconnect because they haven't done enough choreography and training. So without getting an explanation from both parties, we can just make assumptions.
Hey, Bill, yeah. I want to go back just real quick before we move on from the Zach Steppen thing. And I think it'll be really enlightening or eye-opening to see when he comes back into the national team and they start to play a little bit out of the back. Is he as comfortable and to see what he looks like in terms of how they've trained it and what they expect, but also the level of player that he's playing to coming out of the back there as opposed to who he is playing with at Man City.
Yeah, I don't think he should be doing some of the things he's doing with Man City.
Right.
If he returns to the national team, it's like, you just don't got the same players, man. You know, you just can't do that. I remember, and I think we've talked about it, there was a time when Zach was really forcing it out of the back, but I think that was what Greg Berhalter was, that was when he initially took over the team. He was really, it sounds awful, he was really imposing that on the team. But they were going to build out of the back no matter what. And it looked bad. I mean, it looked like those aren't good decisions. But those were friendlies, those were whatever. So hopefully that was an education. And that's okay. So now we know what we can and what we can't do.
But it's interesting, Billy, that you're bringing that up. And I think we addressed earlier how before you had gotten on when we were just chatting a bit, it's, you know, Tim Ditmar and from from the English FA was talking about their development within their goalkeepers and their style and how they wanted their goalkeepers to be able to play around, play through, play into. And the earlier generation of goalkeepers were struggling because they weren't asked to do that. You know, Joe Hart wasn't asked to do those type of things. But here you are talking about, you know, Greg Berhalter and how he's imposing it. And the reason why I'm bringing it up today is because if you were watching the Bayern game today versus Borussia Mönchengladbach, they were talking about how Borussia's coach is imposing that they play more out of the back, and especially against a team like Bayern as well, because you got to be able to play through them, but also to keep the ball and not just immediately give it back to them. So were there mistakes made today by the goalkeeper Sommer? Absolutely. There were times where he gave away the ball and even knocked it out of bounds. But it's, again, you know, where's the starting point? So, you know, so it's now hopefully we'll see that evolution in Steffen as well.
Yeah. No, I think he's just going to now, he'll go through a little bit more of an adjustment because the next time he's called up, you know, okay, yeah, you can't do this now. How much can you play? What ball is safe? And again, you just, part of it is also just knowing the players. I think I've talked about, I'm not going to say his name, but I can't believe he's an associate AD at St. John's. But he wanted the ball. I just remember looking at him going like, no, I'm not giving you the ball. You're going to give it away and he's going to be coming back at me. No. And I mean, I just was as direct like that because he said, yeah. I'm going, no. And I didn't give him the ball because, again, I said, you're going to give it away in a bad spot. And Zach is going to have to go through that because there's going to be sometimes when he's back with the national team, it's like, okay, I think I would be playing this ball, but that's not, I mean, who's the blonde guy in the left back for City that looks like De Bruyne? I don't know if you guys know who I'm talking about, but okay, it's not that same player, so I can't play that ball. I'm not going to do that. This case, I am going to have to play forward. I am going to have to play a longer ball to get it out of risk, to get it out of pressure. And he's just going to, that's why goalkeepers are better when they're older. They learn, you know, this is a good decision, this is not a good decision.
Decision making one-on-one.
Yeah.
But Billy, from a youth standpoint, and what you were just addressing and talking about, like, I'm not giving you the ball, but how many times would you probably see that in the youth game where, you know, somebody's faced up towards their goalkeeper because they've tracked down a long ball, and, now you're going to find that ball going back to the goalkeeper, where probably before it was either hooked out of bounds, you know, maybe turned over, but now you're finding more goalkeepers are capable of playing with their feet because of the rule change years ago. But at the same time, how many of those players were probably thinking the same thing? Like, if I give the ball back to the goalkeeper, he's just going to turn it over.
Yeah. But again, that puts the pressure on the goalkeeper and the goalkeeper coach to train the goalkeeper to be able to receive a ball and deal with it.
So on the Zach Steffen thing, now he got his big start a week ago in the Chelsea game, and I put a lot of thought into this. In the world of, like, global sports, if Tom Brady gets touched after he throws a ball, automatic roughing the passer. If LeBron drives the lane and gets touched, he's going to shoot two from the line. Everybody knew it was the kid in goal, and a minute into the game, kind of – interrupted back pass. If that had been a Van de Sar or a Peter Cech or a Petter Schmeichel, would they have called a back pass on those guys compared to the kid in goal? Because there was this hesitation from the officiating crew, and then it was like, well, he's just a kid, he's gonna pay his dues today. I was wondering if anybody had any takes on him having to establish himself as a worthy goalkeeper in the league, being the COVID call up for the day.
It's the stupid yank. It's the yank.
Yeah.
Or maybe Shooky, if it was, maybe the better take is if it was anybody but a young American goalkeeper.
I didn't want to go there, but okay. Yeah.
And I went there.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. Because, Peter Cech's playing with their U23 team again, and I watched the highlights, and I still can't figure out from a club developmental point of view why you've got a 40-year-old guy who's been out of the game for 2.5 years back playing as your U23 starter. You know, how does that reputation affect him? You know, because if that's Chelsea and that's Peter Cech, there's no way they call that. But now it's Man City and Zach Steffen, the first time starting American. It's weird.
Yeah. I mean.
And he got away with it. It
ended up okay for him in the sense that, you know, they didn't immediately lose anything from it and stuff like that. So I think in that regard, yeah, go ahead. If I'm
Bill,
Zach
Steffen. Bill, didn't you send us a study on referees and their bias, on their biases? I mean, that had to do with home field, you know, games being played.
Successful teams versus less successful teams.
Okay.
And again, when I was coaching at Oregon, if there's any referees listening, I apologize, but it's like, if my player falls down, they're clumsy. If the UCLA player falls down, they were fouled.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a little bit of that bias going on.
All levels.
But I mean, he survived it. So I think, you know what? That'll be a story that he can reflect on, you know, hopefully in 10 years when he's holding a cup, holding some hardware for the U.S.
Yeah, and it'll be just also, back in the day, remember when those three EPL refs were all against me and I showed them who's boss?
Yeah. 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 I mean, He survived it. Let's say it that way. He survived it. So that's a fair thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a trial by fire.
Shooky, what were a couple of the other topics you had you'd had down too. I had one as well, but
Looking at sort of how the big, ever since the departure of Peter Cech from Chelsea and the goal, sort of the revolving door of goalkeepers there.
Yeah.
And is that part of the revolving door of coaches and a change of philosophy and no one being able to find form? Because you had Courtois step in, high-priced guy, big on the scene with Belgium, very successful internationally, and coming from, I believe, Atletico, and then just could not find form when he got into the team. And now he's found form again back in Real Madrid. But now you've got Kepa come in there who can't find his legs. And then Mendy was supposed to come in and fix it. And now he's having the same problem. So multiple goalkeepers and Chelsea. And I just heard this, 14 coaches going through that club ever since Mourinho took the team in 2014.
Didn't they have what game was it when the goalkeeper wouldn't come out? They were trying to search for
him? Kepa.
Yeah.
Kepa?
Yeah. I mean, what kind of precedent do you set for him?
Was coaching the team then.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, who knows what's going on, but my thing is you've got goalkeepers with great profiles and are successful when they go back with their national squads, but no one can find a rhythm within that team. And I'm confused by it. And it's like, I'm obviously an Arsenal fan, so I don't mind seeing Chelsea struggle, but I don't like seeing goalkeepers be the cause of it and just can't figure out what's going on within that team, that the position that was most stable under Cech for all those years is now their biggest question mark.
And you'd think even more difficult for Kepa, as if we think about the profile of the goalkeepers being younger and not having the pedigree and the experiences to fall back on to maybe deal with whatever the underlying issue is. And, you know, when you had sent us a message, Shuki, my thought was, okay, my brain just starts to spin a little bit. So what are all the angles? It's, you know, like, is it the goalkeeper? Is it the goalkeeping coach? Is it the integration of the goalkeeper to the goalkeeping coach to the staff? What's the integration of goalkeeper into tactical awareness and tactical play, all these things I just started to think of. What it just made me realize, if people don't realize already, A, how important the goalkeeper is, but B, how important the integration of the tactics and everything else that goes on, how important that is. And heck, to be honest with you, we're managing goalkeepers' egos too, which are not always the easiest things to manage. So it's I think there's a lot of layers there. Maybe this is a job for Dr. Bill.
Well, no, I'm just jotting down a reminder to myself to send my resume to Chelsea to say you need a goalkeeper coach.
Psychological consultant.
Yeah, exactly. I think that one of the things is that part of it is kind of like, and you guys have touched on it. I mean, Kepa was younger. He doesn't have the gravitas as somebody like a Cech who's been around and he's done it, and you know, you know him. And I think part of that probably comes to play. The other thing I was thinking about, Lotto, when you were talking, is like, think about, we're now including goalkeepers into tactics, and you don't have to go back that many years to say, look, you're the goalkeeper, just stand back there and stop shots. That's it, man. Don't worry about nothing else. We'll take care of it. It's the old Monty Python script, you know, what's your job? Win the ball, give it to somebody clever. What do you do next? Win the ball, give it to somebody clever. And that's what goalkeeping, we're involved in the tactics. But just in our conversation so far, I mean, we've talked about the tactical differences that Zach Steffen has to go through, that all goalkeepers have to go through now. And so now we are imposing greater demands on goalkeepers, because you didn't have to worry about that before. Going back, you know, to when I played, it's like basically stop the shot and then get the ball and then knock it long. And, I can do that. Now it's like, okay, well, when do we do this? When don't we do this?
Yeah, and there's so many more demands put on them. And now there's so many more eyes on them, you know, be it social media, be it international broadcasts. You know, we say we're older, but we don't have to go back that many years when you couldn't sit down on a couch on a Saturday morning and a Sunday morning and watch 3-4 straight Premier League games and text the other guys on the goalkeeper roundtable and say, this guy's awesome, this guy sucks, did you see that? You know, it was just, you couldn't do that. So there's, I mean, there's more eyes on the goalkeepers now. And I say that in theory, but also in reality, it's just, there's how many cameras, like if you watch a game, like there's replays from five different angles, and I'm guilty. I scrutinize it, you know, but I scrutinize it from, could he have done better? You know, how great was that? And, you know, and I wish from an educational standpoint, I had that when I was a younger coach, but as a younger, even a player too, to be able to appreciate that and look
at it. Well, I think that the kids, when they, as you pointed out, a lot of, there's so many more games on, there's so many more opportunities to watch goalkeepers. I think that the kids, the young goalkeepers have to watch, not so much, you know, for the highlight reel. It's like, again, what's the biggest problem in basketball now in the US? Kids can dunk and they can shoot threes, nothing in between. Baseball, they hit home runs or they strike out. They don't train these other things. And so the kids, when they watch, don't just watch saves. Watch, okay, now he played the ball long. Now he's holding the ball. Now he's like settling the team down. Why is he doing this now? And why is he not just immediately, you know, as soon as he gets it, racing to the top of the box and playing out? Why is this time when he won the cross, did he stop and stand around for a minute or two and kind of like delay? Why did he slow the tempo down then?
Bill, you forgot the part where he catches it. There's no one within 15 yards. He falls into a front smother,
oh, yeah,
looks around for 10 seconds, and then gets up before the count starts.
Yeah, that's definitely a key part, guys.
Yeah. I hate that when they, okay,
oh, it's awful.
I go up and catch a cross, and then I bring it down into a front smother.
Yeah.
I want to go back to what Shooky brought up about Mendy, and the reason why is because when Chelsea was going on that earlier streak of like six games where they had, you know, basically started, you know, close to the top of the league, and you know they were rolling, call it what it is, and all of a sudden you find that a team, you know, hits that bump in the road and now they can't get out of their own way. They weren't talking about Mendy, you know, they actually thought they had the solution. So it's just amazing how quickly, how, you know, when the tide turns, how all of a sudden a goalkeeper can be brought under scrutiny. Because I mean, yeah, Kepa was given a number of opportunities, and he, a lot, there's no doubt, a number of opportunities, which I believe is good because you want to see if this kid could ride it out or if the kid could step up to the plate and really fix what was going on. But at the same time, here we are, we're just at the start of the season and we're talking about Mendy. You know, and it's just really interesting how now from a psychological standpoint, the pressure is immense on the goalkeepers. I mean, what you're talking about, Billy, I mean, goalkeepers now have so many more responsibilities. And now here we are talking about the amount of pressure. And now he's got to understand that, hey, he's now in the spotlight for possibly what usually happens. When there is usually a change, they change the goalkeeper.
Yeah. Well, I think, but George, that's a good point. And I'm just going to take and bring it back to the whole thing with Zach Steffen picking up that back pass. Because if that free kick goes in, what happens to him then? It's like they're going to just say, no, you know, halftime. If he lasts, they'll halftime, you know, before they yank him.
He's going back to Columbus is what's happening.
Yeah. There you go, yeah. But, he, in that regard, you know, it may be good that, okay, I screwed up, but I didn't fold. Mm-hmm. I didn't fold. And I just think back to, I don't know if, you know, obviously, you know, I go back and forth with Anselm some things, and he'll get asked that question, like, what would you tell 30-year-old Anselm or 20-year-old Anselm if you could go back in time? And Anselm will say, nothing. I'm going to let him screw up. I'm going to let him make those mistakes because he learned from them. And so I think if you told Zach Steffen in 10 years or 15 years, go back to that game. It wasn't the United game, whatever game that was. Who was that against? Was that against Chelsea?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Against Chelsea. Go back to that Chelsea game, the first game you start. Would you pick up that back pass again? And yeah, nothing happened. I picked it up and nothing happened. I handled it. I finished the match, you know, it was fine. So I don't know. I mean, I think that you want to give them the opportunity. So, okay, you screwed up. What happens now? Do you fold? And I think that's, you know, again, thus far, you know, knock wood, Zach Steffen hasn't.
And we'll probably see what's going to happen with Mendy as well, because I don't think they have another solution at this point in time either. So,
but is that why Cech is training with playing with the U23s? Because I'm not saying they want to pull him in to start, but do they need another capable goalkeeper to, you know, to play other matches if Mendy gets
hurt? What I read was there were COVID issues, and they were having to call the 23s up to the full team. And with him being the goalkeeping coach and someone who's taken very good care of himself, he could sub into the 23 games without interrupting that team and compromising them with having to pull a 15-year-old up to play. Mm-hmm. But I watched him play a week ago in the 23 game against Tottenham. He's not his former self, obviously. I mean, we all lose the battle to Father Time. There was a sense of calm and leadership, which I question not letting a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old develop in that and expedite his development. But I said, I'm not running that club. I'm not Roman Abramovich. So I don't
get it. I just wonder, Jeff, I appreciate you made the point about, okay, so he's there, not so much for the goalkeepers, for goalkeeping, he's there to talk to the back four.
Yep.
So maybe he's kind of coaching on the field in that regard. And that might be a reason to do that.
That's what he was doing. And I mean, he literally broke up what was a potential brawl. I mean, the old man stepped in and pulled a bunch of young kids apart, and cooler heads prevailed. But it was so funny seeing so many young players, like physically young. And then this old man just come in there and the elder statement, both teams listened to him. So there was immense amounts of respect for what he's done in the game, inside and outside of the game. And the referees weren't dealing with it as well as he was.
Yeah. So, interesting. Referees don't have as much respect as he does.
Yeah.
That's a difficult thing. And that's where... this can segue to, how does a goalkeeper get that respect? Obviously longevity is a big thing, but what are other things that help a goalkeeper get that respect? What do you think, George?
Well, I mean, one of the most important things that we always talk about is developing the goalkeeper's confidence. And I just think the only way to gain that level of confidence is maintaining that reliability, so that day to day you have a standard and an expectation that you are constantly performing to, so your teammates understand, like, this is what we're going to get out of him or her. So I think that's where it comes from, is that when you are constantly showing and doing the right things consistently, and it's like not every 2 weeks you're having a blunder, or I mean, we're talking, you're going months of, you know, so I always look at consistency equals greatness. And, you know, you think about the, you know, before, like Roger Federer and a Nadal and a Djokovic and how long they've been doing it. And then you think about a Messi and a Ronaldo, how long they've been doing it. I mean, that's pretty much tells you that, you know, the, how important developing consistency, and, you know, just being someone that day in and day out performs when it matters most.
And that stands to his character as mm-hmm. a human. And when you think back to his career, I mean, they say he was a fraction of an inch from dying with a depressed skull fracture mm-hmm. and worked as hard as he could to come back and played the rest of his career in a helmet and took one more skull injury and still came back. So I think his overall commitment to the game, to himself, has led for this outward look of respect on him from his peers.
I think but the thing you touched upon there for a second, Jeff, I think is also important, is work.
Yeah.
I remember the first year I played professionally, I didn't know I didn't have to pass the fitness tests. So, yeah, I'm an idiot. I mean, I beat I beat Elvis Comrie in the fitness tests. And right away, these guys know, because they, you know, again, the perception, the goalkeeper, yeah, you know, you just stand in between the posts and you just do stuff. It's like, no, okay, you know what? Let's go, you and me, fitness test. And, you know, I think the work, putting in that work is tremendously important. The goalkeeper has to do that. The coach has to also provide opportunities for that. At Oregon, when we had our fitness day, basically, you know, you're playing Friday and Sunday, and then Monday's the off day, Tuesday's your fitness day. And I would always say, while the field players were warming up for their 120s, goalkeepers were doing pressure training so that the field players are watching the goalkeepers going like, damn, I don't want to do that. I'll run the 120s. I ain't doing that. But the fact that they could demonstrate that work rate, I think they maybe one or two times before the goalkeepers realized, that's why you're having me do this. You're having everybody watch me do this because they see how hard we work. And that obviously led to a lot of good things. And so I think that the work rate that those goalkeepers put in gets that respect as well. Lottie, you had something.
Yeah, you made a great point about the fitness thing, and I'll make a point about that too. But I was thinking before you said that, I transferred from one school to another school. So I had to go from a school or go into a new school where nobody knew me. I didn't know one player on the team, not a soul. Played against a couple of them in high school, but I didn't know a soul. And I went in the spring semester and went into, in Connecticut, I don't know what the difference is now, but we played a lot of indoor. We trained in the gym, we played in the gym, we played a couple indoor tournaments. We actually hosted an indoor tournament, went to UConn's indoor tournament, and then we would play some outdoor matches. But for me, I don't know, it wasn't so much a conscious, like, I am going to do this. It was a sort of inherent, like, I need to establish myself right away. Cause I felt like if I didn't win the starting position and win it in the spring, I was in trouble for the next 2 years. Yeah. I just wasn't going to happen. So that work ethic that I brought into that and the idea that I needed to make changes personally rubbed off a little bit on the other goalkeepers, who they were all starting, thought they were fighting for a starting position because the senior goalkeeper left. So they were all thinking, okay, here's my chance. You know, one's a sophomore, one's a junior, and I'm coming in as a second semester sophomore. And they had to work a little harder. And I think that the team respected that because it just showed immediately, and just in terms of personality. And then, you know, that went into into my junior, my senior year in terms of just general work rate, go out early. I was doing plyometrics and quickness footwork and those kinds of things too. And so that respect and, you know, you get that from your other teammates by just knowing that you're there to work hard and, you know, be a part of the program. And it's funny that you mentioned the fitness test because I don't think our guys took the fitness test as seriously as they should have. And I came in my junior year, and this was, you know, the position was really still up for grabs. And we did the standard, you know, 12, it was a 12 minute, you know, 2 mile on the track. And like, which was, you know, I hate at that time, I sort of hated running, but I did it really to do the fitness test. And Mike, oh yeah, exactly. Now, right. Things change, right. Things change. But I went out and I ran it, and I ran 11:30 for 2 miles. So it was only like two or three dudes faster than me. And the other goalkeepers at that point, for all sense and purposes, gave up. One guy, he could see it. He resigned to it. He got through preseason. I started both of our preseason matches. I was going to be the starter, and he quit. And, you know, the other kid was younger, and, you know, he kind of dealt with it. He was my age and he had redshirted, so he had another extra year. But, you know, just by doing that, you know, and it would have been easy to coast, but I came in my senior year and I ran the fastest time, and just because. And what I didn't realize at the time is, although you'd think your teammates respected it, a lot of dudes hated me for it because I kicked their ass. And my coach just ripped our other captain and a bunch of the other seniors. So it was long story, but
no, but that's what does it. I think the other thing is, again, just, this has been a good conversation because I think some of the other things that I think about, are competitive this. I mean, I never.
Yes.
You know, I would never, if the ball goes in the net, I'm pissed. Mm-hmm. And I would, if you could read me, I'm not very vocal. I'm not very emotive, but you could tell that I'm not happy. And I think, you know, think about a forward, you know, they miss a shot.
Whatever.
Yeah. But they saw how competitive I was and how I always was trying to win. And I think these are some other things that, and again, I'll fall back on, you know, more answer stories, but that's the one thing that I think he would value. If he's going to recruit a kid, he wants to see how competitive is this kid? Mm-hmm. How does this kid compete? And so I always felt like I was competitive. I didn't like to lose. You know, I'm not going to throw myself off a bridge, but I don't like to lose. And so I think that came across as well. And I think that's something that, you know, if you handle it properly.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, players appreciate it. They think, yeah. Okay, yeah, you know what, this guy wants to win. I want him on my team.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I think that's especially in goal. You know, you can get pissed and you can get pissed and hang your head, or you can get pissed and blame people, or you can get pissed and say, I'm not going to let that happen again.
Right.
And so I think that's what other players,
Some ownership, Bill, when we do make mistakes as goalkeepers, I think there's a level of appreciation for that. Yeah. There's times where we have to dig into a defender or to someone. And, you know, like you said, it's not always what you say, it's how you say it. And sometimes you just got to get your point across, however you want to get it across. But as a goalkeeper, when we F up, we've got to own that we effed up. You put your hand up and you said, that one's on me. You know, I see some kids right now, no matter what they do, it's not them. Oh, hell no, it's not them. You know, but even when, yeah, there might've been things other players could do in front of that. If you think you could have done better, put your hand up, own it, you know, and move on. And there's some respect given. Well, I'd hope there's respect given for that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think so. What are the things in terms of getting that long-term respect? If we're talking to goalkeeper coaches, coaching young kids, a lot of what we're talking about is it takes time.
Keep the ball out of the frickin' net.
Wait a minute, hold on. Let me write that down. keep the ball out of where? Yeah.
Save is a save is a save is a save, right, Billy? Right?
Yeah. What other things were you guys trying to talk about?
The one other thing that I wanted to bring up and we can discuss is I thought about, and we've had our discussions about K-save, block save, and the Cap Mertz called it the
SpongeBob.
Patrick. And looking at it, we've discussed it, if you know, not to death, but we've discussed it enough that I think people believe that, or know that we, if it's used in the right way, in a timely manner, and the save is made, fantastic. But we also have a belief, and I'll paraphrase for the group, that if it's being used too much in a premature fashion, mm-hmm. That people are going to it as a safety valve, and it's not safe. So I've started to think a little bit, and I want to watch more, and maybe encourage coaches and goalkeepers to watch more. Because I believe we're starting to see field players who and strikers who have done their homework. They start to watch a little video. Yeah. They start to see goalkeepers that, hey, they do this, their technique. They go into it early and look where I can score. I can score high. And where I'm starting to see it a little bit is balls being hit a little early and being hit high because they go into the save prematurely low, gets hit over the shoulder, over the head. And the other spot is the trail leg, where some player, they're not very effective at using the trail leg in that K save or the block save. And it just, some players may be more flexible. Some players use it better. In the case of Neuer, who maybe today, we're talking about this on a day where he gave up 3 goals and 2 of them were on breakaways. Those types of saves, which, you know, on breakaways. But he's very effective in staying balanced, laying the leg flat to the ground as much as he can, and being really patient to get into that save. So, you know, my thought is, as opposed to just saying it's happening, I think it's starting to happen, but let's see how it develops in terms of who's going to stay ahead of the game. The goalkeepers in terms of refining that save, being better decision makers in that save and using it, or are the strikers going to get ahead of the goalkeeper and realize who is going into those positions prematurely, knowing where they can play balls behind a trail leg, over a shoulder, past their face, because they always turn their head and they don't see it. Or some players, some goalkeepers are opening up the five hole and right down the freaking middle, which I think is probably the more difficult side. So that's Messi's shot right there. So thoughts on that maybe.
So I think for years we've been getting scouting reports on players.
Yes.
What's their dominant foot? What's their preferred surface? Where are their tendencies? And I think now they're turning the script back on us, and they're figuring out, when does he go into this? Why does he go into this? What is she doing in this moment? And then using the data back against us. So once again, it still comes back to the save makes sense when you're patient and you apply it at the right time and you apply the proper technique. It just can't be an end-all, be-all moment and hope to get hit. Because if you're hoping to get hit, that's a terrible strategy.
Right. Yeah. And Shuki, Georgie's up, but I don't want to segue this, but it's something to think about it. But futuristically speaking, and this is maybe good for Bill too, because he's on the coaching education side, is that our clubs and teams using their quote goalkeeping expert appropriately, in that maybe our goalkeeping coach or expert should be the one breaking down films of other teams' goalkeeper and goalkeeping moments. So they're the ones that say, hey, listen, every time you get to this position, they get into this position, they're off balance with their weight, and these are opportunities. And it's one of those things like with PKs, you give the goalkeeper, hey, they always go this way, your choice in the end, which way you want to dive or guess. But same thing now with strikers. Should we be using our goalkeeping experts to break down just goalkeeping moments from your opposition?
Well, I think Lotto is like, okay, he always kicks out, if I'm the goalkeeper, I'm always kicking out my left leg.
Yes.
Yeah, he always kicks out his left leg. So you're just going to play the ball low alongside that other leg.
Right.
George,
it's just interesting because, you know, we're seeing it, and it seems to be the preferred option. And, you know, when we are teaching youth goalkeepers, you know, when you're breaking it down, and especially when you were part of, you know, the DeChico methodology, it's just like, okay, we're going to win the naked ball and the free ball. So you're going to go with your hands. And then all of a sudden you talk about the 50-50 ball and you teach smothering. And then you talk about, hey, you're going to have to deal with the dribble and shot, and you start talking about stalking. Okay. But at the same time, you know, you're finding now that the preference of this K-save is so prevalent. You know, I sent you guys that video of the Frankfurt match versus Leverkusen. And I mean, we all agreed that I believe it was Trapp from Frankfurt. That first goal, I mean, that's a free ball. It's a free ball, and you would think that a professional goalkeeper will recognize that and get to that ball and win it, and that's it. It's dead, but you see that he continues to get close and then decides to spread.
And didn't he spread twice? Like he went to the knee once and then got up and went to the knee again? Different goal?
Yeah, no, it could have been, but I mean, from what I remember, it's just like we talk about would teach is if you're going to get that close, you might as well commit. You might as well go down, you know, go with your hands, use your body, get to the ball. But it was just interesting to see such a big guy just decide to spread in a case where he did get close. So, you know, again, I'm not their goalkeeper coach, and I'm not seeing what's going on in that environment, but I think you can tell from the Bundesliga that method is being taught and it is being used, and you see it with Neuer, you're seeing it with other goalkeepers in that league. But I guess my question, or I would say my concern, is, you know, are we losing the art of going down with our hands, winning the ball with our hands? And the only time that I really see that is when a player decides to dribble or tries to get around, that now the goalkeeper is having to move their feet and then lunge, and that's when they're using their hands. But I'm not seeing it when they're going towards the ball. I'm seeing them go with their hands when they have to recover more towards the ball.
But I'm going to go back to, and again, I'm going way back, you know, to working with Tony and stuff, and the transition from when you're approaching the forward, when your hands are here, and you're going to drop your hands. And again, you can't see me because of the screen limitations, but your hands go from up here down to alongside your legs because you're that close. And up here, I'm saving shots that are going over the bar. And I've got to have a bigger, as I get closer, dropping the hands down there. I think that point, does anybody teach that anymore?
That stalking method where your hands are off to the side?
As you're closing the player down, your hands go to the sides.
Lotto and I were watching the Bayern game today, and if you saw Neuer, he was in a regular kind of set position, keeping his shape. And then when he recognized that the player was going to shoot and not try to take him on the dribble, he chose a spread method. And he almost, listen, he was close with each time with his leg, his trail leg, but he was beaten. But I'm not seeing that method of really staying low in that position and kind of reacting. I was reviewing another goal, but it wasn't really a breakaway, but I saw Ter Stegen try to drop his hand on one against Athletic Bilbao. But
well, we've talked about it, man. We've talked about it before, but the size of the goalkeeper makes a difference, and we have to reference Neuer in that situation where, and if you watch today, Grant, he got exposed by his team, you know, 1v1, you know, and we're not saying that there's anything. This is a Neuer thing, but it just happened to be what we watched and how he uses it. George, it was the first goal where I think we both agreed he might have been moving a little bit, but his weight was back too. Yeah. So he almost didn't have a choice but to try to save with his feet or with his legs.
Yeah, he reacted. Yeah.
But when he does, he's flexible. He doesn't leave a gap in the five hole. He's long. He faces the ball. He doesn't turn his head. And he gives himself opportunities to save with each part of the starfish, if you want to call it that.
He holds his shape for the last minute.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's not trying to be predictive. And a lot of it goes to, he's huge. He's extremely athletic. And he's cerebral. He doesn't come out flying like De Gea does several times.
Yes.
He stalks, he gets in a position, and then he waits for your action to give his action. His isn't the first one, because if yours is the first action, well, then the player's picking one of six or seven spots to beat.
And that's my his point with him. Is like,
you beat me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in a spot. You got to
definitely.
Me.
Especially in the first, the second one, excuse me.
The second one for sure, yeah.
Yeah, the second one, he was very balanced. He's reading. And then he tried to react using.
And he does that. And the other thing, if it's a smaller goalkeeper, and if it was me, and let's just say I'm in that same situation, whether I like it or I don't like it, there's no chance I'm going to spread. I'm either going to hold my shape and try to kick save, but there's no way I could kick save because that ball was too far away. But me, I'm small enough where my response is going to be hold shape, try to go with my hands. But he's so big and so long that he can do that. And I think we said it before, we have to start differentiating that. And one more example was the Mainz game where they're 2-0 down. I think they were 2-0 down. And he makes a save. He's moving quickly to his left in a tight environment. And he goes into sort of he drops the right knee, which closes the five hole. There's no opening. He closes the five hole, faces the ball, left hand is up, right leg is dragging, and he's sort of sliding, and he leaves the leg and saves it with the right side of his calf and pops right back up. He doesn't fall down. And almost the same type of ball a little bit later, same thing, moving to his left. He's not going to be able to completely set himself, and he does the same thing. Drops the right knee, closes the five hole, faces the ball, and he deflects it with that left hand off or around the post. Like, it's just an incident of athleticism. And I think Jeff said that to us in a text message. Because of his athleticism and his balance, he does that so well. And, you know, yeah, he makes mistakes, but he probably makes less mistakes than other people. But the biggest thing there is he does it so well, and he waits so long. it's really difficult for strikers to beat him. So the goals he got scored on against today, those were great finishes too.
Yeah, they're good finishes, all three goals.
Yeah. Well, I think that you made a point, because I forget which of you said it, but you know, they don't go to it too early. And that's my big fear, is that when coaches are training this and kids think, oh, this is like, you know, diving, reacting to the ball. No, and they tend to do it too early. And someone, it might have been Carl Spratt, said, you know, that's your last resort. So you're not really going to train it. You're just going to say, okay, look, when you can't be doing anything else, you go into that shape. Again, I'm still probably hesitant. And I'm just old school enough to say I'm really going to be hesitant to tell a kid to do that, because I always think, look, if you're in a good spot, you hold and say, you know, okay, now you got to beat me. And then as soon as they take the touch, you're waiting for that touch that you can win or that you can block or smother. So again, I think, I don't know if this, we're talking apples and oranges or just different kinds of apples.
No, but we're going back to in the inauguration, we started to see it more. I bet it was more successful. And I think it's going to become less successful unless it's for the goalkeepers that are using it in the right moments, and being patient and being balanced. And when if they do try it in a 1v1 situation, again, whether we think it's right or wrong, where they can go with their hands, you're starting to see some goalkeepers that are successful, that when they go into that, they have forward movement. So they're actually encroaching on, I'd be scared to go that way. Like, not just dropping a leg, but actually moving into the ball, spreading my freaking nuts out there like that. Sorry, but you know, and just, I guess a save is a save, but well, you're also putting yourself in a position.
Who's gonna hit something that small?
Yeah. but we're gonna put ourselves, you know, in that position. It's, you know, we're gonna have to deal with it. But going back to the original point is it gonna start getting exposed? Like, is that technique gonna start to be more exposed by good teams and good players? And I, you know, with our team, I almost said this past season now is over a year ago. And, you know, I'd see it with goalkeepers that they just, you know, they're not taught it. And they, I finally got the point to my strikers, and I had them do it in training, because my goalkeepers were guilty of it, of going too early and selling out, whether it's some kind of spread or K, whatever it is. And I told my strikers, I go, pump fake everything, step on a ball, jab fake. And I go, first, you're going to start to get our goalkeepers to move, and I need to teach them a lesson. Number one. The second thing is, we'd get into a game at halftime, and I looked at our guys that are our front running players. I go, just head fake. Like, if you just wink at the goalkeeper, he's diving to the right post. So wink at him, step over, do something, just a little bit of deception. You know, again, we're talking at a higher level in Premier League and in Bundesliga, but they're crafty too, and they have ways that they'll figure it out. But again, it goes back to, maybe our goalkeeping experts need to start doing more evaluation and film study to help their teams and their strikers. And that's just,
yeah. But a lot of your point makes me think, because the biggest thing I remember is teaching forwards is to beat the goalkeeper with pace. Number one, you're probably faster than a goalkeeper. Yeah. Number two, the goalkeeper is kind of, too many goalkeepers are set and kind of like planted. And if you just touch it wide, I'm going to get to that ball before you can't keep up with me. And then I'm just going to knock it in, and just beating the goalkeeper with pace. And I don't know if it's now goalkeepers are fast enough that forwards don't think they can beat a goalkeeper with pace. But I think that's the thing that I always thought was like, if I'm a forward, I'm just going to run around you because you're the goalkeeper. You're planted. You got your arms wide. I'm sprinting with the ball. I'm going to beat you with pace. And, you know, again, there's all sorts of other issues that could crop up, obviously, in each unique situation. You know, I don't have the space. There's players wide of me. I can't run because there's defenders. There's things like that. But I think just prohibiting them from beating me with pace is the biggest thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. Beat him with pace, drag a leg, take a PK.
Yeah, there you go. Roll. Cool. All right. Well, we've provided enlightenment for all.
If anyone's still listening,
yeah, I am.
Yes,
right, Dave. Yeah, Yeah.
I'm the only person that looks out the window right now, and it's daylight.
No,
I've seen your houses get darker by the minute.
Exactly.
Oh yeah. No, it's amazing though. North Carolina, we have snow. Snow today. It's snowing now. Yeah, my wife just came in with snow on her.
We had sun for the first day in a while today.
Okay. All right. Well, good, fellas. It's been good. Let me close off the recording and see you all next week.
We hope you enjoyed that episode at the Goalkeeper Roundtable. If you'd like to reach out with suggestions, comments, or questions, all of our email addresses are available in the show description. If you like the show, we'd love for you to subscribe to it, but also share it in social media platforms or with any other goalkeeper or coach who may find value in it. We hope you turn in to the next Goalkeeper Roundtable.